The sound of shattering ice, a glacier breaking. And then the lake seemed to blow apart, silver water exploding upward like a reverse hailstorm. And rising with the hailstorm came the angel. Clary was not sure what she'd expected, something like ethereal. But ethereal had been diminished by many years of captivity and torment. This was an angel in the full force of his glory. As he rose from the water, her eyes began to burn as if she were staring into the sun. Valentine's hands had fallen to his sides. He was gazing upward with a rapt expression, a man watching his greatest dream become reality.
"Raziel," he breathed.
The angel continued to rise as if the lake were sinking away, revealing a great column of marble at its center. First his head emerged from the water, streaming hair like chains of silver and gold. Then shoulders, white as stone, and then a bare torso. And Clary saw that the angel was marked all over with runes, just as the Nephilim were. Although Raziel's runes were golden and alive, moving across his white skin like sparks flying from a flame. Somehow, at the same time, the angel was both enormous and no bigger than a man. Clary's eyes hurt trying to take all of him in, and yet he was all that she could see. As he rose, wings burst from his back and opened wide across the lake, and they were gold too, and feathered, and set into each feather was a single golden staring eye. It was beautiful, and also terrifying. Clary wanted to look away, but she wouldn't. She would watch it all. She would watch it for Jace, because he couldn't.
"It's just like all those pictures," she thought.
The angel, rising from the lake, the sword in one hand and the cup in the other. Both were streaming water, but Raziel was dry as a bone, his wings undampened. His feet rested, white and bare, on the surface of the lake, stirring its waters into small ripples of movement. His face, beautiful and inhuman, gazed down at Valentine. And then he spoke. His voice was like a cry and a shout, and like music, all at once. It contained no words, yet was totally comprehensible. The force of his breath nearly knocked Valentine backward. He dug the heels of his boots into the sand. His head tilted back as if he were walking against a gale. Clary felt the wind of the angel's breath pass over her. It was hot like air escaping from a furnace, and smelled of strange spices.
"It has been 1,000 years since I was last summoned to this place," Raziel said. "Jonathan Shadowhunter called on me then, and begged me to mix my blood with the blood of mortal men in a cup, and created a race of warriors who would rid this earth of demonkind. I did all that he asked and told him I would do no more. Why do you summon me now, Nephilim?"
Valentine's voice was eager.
"1,000 years have passed, glorious one, but demonkind are still here.
What is that to me? 1,000 years for an angel pass between one blink of an eye and another.
The Nephilim you created were a great race of men. For many years they valiantly battled to rid this plane of demon taint, but they have failed due to weakness and corruption in their ranks. I intend to return them to their former glory."
"Glory?"
The angel sounded faintly curious, as if the word were strange to him.
"Glory belongs to God alone."
Valentine didn't waver.
"The clave, as the first Nephilim created it, exists no more. They have allied themselves with downworlders, the demon-tainted non-humans who infest this world like fleas on the carcass of a rat. It is my intention to cleanse this world, to destroy every downworlder along with every demon."
"Demons do not possess souls. But as for the creatures you speak of, the children of Moon, Night, Lilith, and Fairy, all are souled. It seems that your rules as to what does and does not constitute a human being are stricter than our own."
Clary could have sworn the angel's voice had taken on a dry tone.
"Do you intend to challenge heaven like that other morning star whose name you bear, Shadowhunter?"
"Not to challenge heaven, no, Lord Raziel. To ally myself with heaven."
"In a war of your making?"
"We are heaven, Shadowhunter. We do not fight in your mundane battles."
When Valentine spoke again, he sounded almost hurt.
"Lord Raziel, Surely you would not have allowed such a thing as a ritual by which you might be summoned to exist if you did not intend to be summoned. We Nephilim are your children. We need your guidance.
Guidance? Now the angel sounded amused. That hardly seems to be why you brought me here. You seek rather your own renown.
Renown? Valentine echoed hoarsely. I have given everything for this cause. My wife, my children. I have not withheld my sons. I have given everything I have for this. Everything.
The angel simply hovered, gazing down at Valentine with his weird, inhuman eyes. His wings moved in slow, undeliberate motions, like the passage of clouds across the sky. At last he said, God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son on an altar much like this one, to see who it was that Abraham loved more, Isaac or God. But no one asked you to sacrifice your son, Valentine.
Valentine glanced down at the altar at his feet, splashed with Jace's blood, and then back up at the angel.
If I must, I will compel this from you, he said. But I would rather have your willing cooperation.
When Jonathan Shadowhunter summoned me, said the angel, I gave him my assistance because I could see that his dream of a world free of demons was a true one. He imagined a heaven on this earth. But you dream only of your own glory, and you do not love heaven. My brother Ithuriel can attest to that.
Valentine blanched.
But...
Do you think that I would not know? The angel smiled. It was the most terrible smile Clary had ever seen. It is true that the master of the circle you have drawn can compel from me a single action, but you are not that master.
Valentine stared.
My Lord Raziel, there is no one else.
But there is, said the angel. There is your daughter.
Valentine whirled. Clary, lying half-conscious in the sand, her wrists and arms a screaming agony, stared defiantly back. For a moment their eyes met, and he looked at her, really looked at her, and she realized it was the first time her father had ever looked her in the face and seen her, the first and only time.
Clarissa, he said, what have you done?
Clary stretched out her hand, and with her finger she wrote in the sand at his feet. She didn't draw runes. She drew words. The words he had said to her the first time he'd seen what she could do, when she'd drawn the rune that had destroyed his ship. Mene, mene, tekel, upharsin. His eyes widened, just as Jace's eyes had widened before he died. Valentine had gone bone white. He turned slowly to face the angel, raising his hands in a gesture of supplication.
My Lord Raziel.
The angel opened his mouth and spat. Or at least that was how it seemed to Clary, that the angel spat. And that what came from his mouth was a shooting spark of white fire, like a burning arrow. The arrow flew straight and true across the water and buried itself in Valentine's chest. Or maybe buried wasn't the word. It tore through him, like a rock through thin paper, leaving a smoking hole the size of a fist. For a moment Clary, staring up, could look through her father's chest and see the lake and the fiery glow of the angel beyond. The moment passed. Like a felled tree, Valentine crashed to the ground and lay still, his mouth open in a silent cry, his blind eyes fixed forever in a last look of incredulous betrayal.
That was the justice of heaven. I trust that you are not dismayed.
Clary looked up. The angel hovered over her like a tower of white flame blotting out the sky. His voice was the collision of mountains.
You can compel me to one action, Clarissa Morgenstern. What is it that you want?
Clary opened her mouth. No sound came out.
Ah, yes, the angel said, and there was gentleness in his voice now. The rune.
The many eyes in his wings blinked. Something brushed over her. It was soft, softer than silk or any other cloth, softer than a whisper or the brush of a feather.
It was what she imagined clouds might feel like if they had a texture. A faint scent came with the touch, a pleasant scent, heady and sweet.
The pain vanished from her wrists. No longer bound together, her hands fell to her sides. The stinging at the back of her neck was gone too, and the heaviness from her legs. She struggled to her knees. More than anything, she wanted to crawl across the bloody sand toward the place where Jace's body lay, crawl to him and lay down beside him and put her arms around him, even though he was gone. But the angel's voice compelled her. She remained where she was, staring up into his brilliant golden light. The battle on Brosselin Plain is ending. Morgenstern's hold over his demons vanished with his death. Already many are fleeing. The rest will soon be destroyed. There are Nephilim riding to the shores of this lake at this very moment. If you have a request, Shadow Hunter, speak it now. The angel paused. And remember that I am not a genie. Choose your desire wisely. Clary hesitated, only for a moment. But the moment stretched out as long as any moment ever had. She could ask for anything, she thought dizzily, anything. An end to pain or world hunger or disease, or for peace on earth. But then again, perhaps these things weren't in the power of angels to grant, or they would have already been granted. And perhaps people were supposed to find these things for themselves. It didn't matter anyway. There was only one thing she could ask for in the end, only one real choice. She raised her eyes to the angels. "Jace," she said. The angel's expression didn't change. She had no idea whether Raziel thought her request a good one or a bad one, or whether, she thought with a sudden burst of panic, he intended to grant it at all. "Close your eyes, Clarissa Morgenstern," the angel said. Clary shut her eyes. "You didn't say no to an angel, no matter what it had in mind." Her heart pounding, she sat floating in the darkness behind her eyelids, resolutely trying not to think of Jace. But his face appeared against the blank screen of her closed eyelids anyway, not smiling at her but looking sidelong, and she could see the scar at his temple, the uneven curl at the corner of his mouth, and the silver line on his throat where Simon had bitten him. All the marks and flaws and imperfections that made up the person she loved most in the world. Jace. A bright light lit her vision to scarlet, and she fell back against the sand, wondering if she was going to pass out, or maybe she was dying. But she didn't want to die. Not now that she could see Jace's face so clearly in front of her. She could almost hear his voice, too, saying her name, the way he'd whispered it at Renwick's, over and over again. "Clary, Clary, Clary." "Clary," Jace said. "Open your eyes." She did. She was lying on the sand in her torn, wet, and bloodied clothes. That was the same. What was not the same was that the angel was gone, and with him the blinding white light that had lit the darkness today. She was gazing up at the night sky, white stars like mirrors shining in the blackness, and leaning over her, the light in his eyes more brilliant than any of the stars, was Jace. Her eyes drank him in, every part of him, from his tangled hair to his blood-stained, grimy face to his eyes shining through the layers of dirt, from the bruises visible through his torn sleeves to the gaping, blood-soaked tear down the front of his shirt through which his bare skin showed. And there was no mark, no gash to indicate where the sword had gone in. She could see the pulse beating in his throat and almost threw her arms around him at the sight because it meant his heart was beating. And that meant...
"You're alive," she whispered. "Really alive."
With a slow wonderment, he reached to touch her face.
"I was in the dark," he said softly. "There was nothing there but shadows, and I was a shadow, and I knew that I was dead, and it was over, all of it. And then I heard your voice. I heard you say my name, and it brought me back."
"Not me," Clary's throat tightened. "The angel brought you back."
"Because you asked him to."
Silently, he traced the outline of her face with his fingers, as if reassuring himself that she was real.
"You could have had anything else in the world, and you asked for me."
She smiled up at him. Filthy as he was, covered in blood and dirt, he was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen. "But I don't want anything else in the world." At that, the light in his eyes, already bright, went to such a blaze that she could hardly bear to look at him. She thought of the angel and how he had burned like 1,000 torches, and that Jace had in him some of that same incandescent blood,
and how that burning shone through him now, through his eyes, like light through the cracks in a door.
I love you, Clary wanted to say. And I would do it again. I would always ask for you.
But those weren't the words she said.
You're not my brother, she told him, a little breathlessly, as if, having realized she hadn't yet said them, she couldn't get the words out of her mouth fast enough. You know that, right?
Very slightly, through the grime and blood, Jace grinned.
Yes, he said. I know that.
Epilogue. Across the Sky in Stars. I loved you, so I drew these tides of men into my hands and wrote my will across the sky in stars. T. E. Lawrence. The smoke rose in a lazy spiral, tracing delicate lines of black across the clear air. Jace, alone on the hill overlooking the cemetery, sat with his elbows on his knees and watched the smoke drift heavenward. The irony wasn't lost on him. These were his father's remains, after all. He could see the bier from where he was sitting, obscured by smoke and flame, and the small group standing around it. He recognized Jocelyn's bright hair from here, and Luke standing beside her, his hand on her back. Jocelyn had her head turned aside, away from the burning pyre. Jace could have been one of that group, had he wanted to be. He'd spent the last couple of days in the infirmary, and they'd only let him out this morning, partly so that he could attend Valentine's funeral. But he'd gotten halfway to the pyre, a stacked pile of stripped wood, white as bones, and realized he could go no farther. He turned and walked up the hill instead, away from the mourner's procession. Luke had called after him, but Jace hadn't turned. He'd sat and watched them gather around the bier, watched Patrick Penhallow in his parchment-white gear set the flame to the wood. It was the second time that week he'd watched a body burn, but Max's had been heartbreakingly small. And Valentine was a big man, even flat on his back with his arms crossed over his chest, a seraph blade gripped in his fist. His eyes were bound with white silk, as was the custom. They had done well by him, Jace thought, despite everything. They hadn't buried Sebastian. A group of shadow hunters had gone back to the valley, but they hadn't found his body. Washed away by the river, they'd told Jace, though he had his doubts. He had looked for Clary in the crowd around the bier, but she wasn't there. It had been almost 2 days now since he'd last seen her, at the lake, and he missed her with an almost physical sense of something lacking. It wasn't her fault they hadn't seen each other. She'd been worried he wasn't strong enough to portal back to Alicante from the lake that night, and she'd turned out to be right. By the time the first shadow hunters had reached them, he'd been drifting into a dizzy unconsciousness. He'd woken up the next day in the city hospital with Magnus Bame staring down at him with an odd expression. It could have been deep concern or merely curiosity. It was hard to tell with Magnus. Magnus told him that though the angel had healed Jace physically, it seemed that his spirit and mind had been exhausted to the point that only rest could heal them. In any event, he felt better now, just in time for the funeral. A wind had come up and was blowing the smoke away from him. In the distance he could see the glimmering towers of Alicante, their former glory restored. He wasn't totally sure what he hoped to accomplish by sitting here and watching his father's body burn, or what he would say if he were down there among the mourners, speaking their last words to Valentine. "You were never really my father," he might say, or, "You were the only father I ever knew." Both statements were equally true, no matter how contradictory. When he'd first opened his eyes at the lake, knowing, somehow, that he'd been dead, and now wasn't, all Jace could think about was Clary, lying a little distance away from him on the bloody sand, her eyes closed. He'd scrambled to her in a near panic, thinking she might be hurt or even dead. And when she'd opened her eyes, all he'd been able to think about then was that she wasn't. Not until there were others there, helping him to his feet, exclaiming over the scene in amazement, did he see Valentine's body lying crumpled near the lake's edge, and feel the force of it like a punch in the stomach. He'd known Valentine was dead, would have killed him, himself, but still, somehow, the sight was painful. Clary had looked at Jace with sad eyes, and he'd known that even though she'd hated Valentine and had never had any reason not to, she still felt Jace's loss. He half-closed his eyes, and a flood of images washed across the backs of his eyelids, Valentine picking him up off the grass in a sweeping hug, Valentine holding him in the prow of a boat on a lake, showing him how to balance.
and other, darker memories. Valentine's hand cracking across the side of his face. A dead falcon. The angel shackled in the Wayland cellar.
Jace.
He looked up. Luke was standing over him, a black silhouette outlined by the sun. He was wearing jeans and a flannel shirt as usual. No concessionary funeral white for him.
It's over, Luke said. The ceremony. It was brief.
I'm sure it was. Jace dug his fingers into the ground beside him, welcoming the painful scrape of dirt against his fingertips. Did anyone say anything?
Just the usual words.
Luke eased himself down onto the ground beside Jace, wincing a little. Jace hadn't asked him what the battle had been like. He hadn't really wanted to know. He knew it had been over much quicker than anyone had expected. After Valentine's death, the demons he had summoned had fled into the night like so much mist burned off by the sun. But that didn't mean there hadn't been deaths. Valentine's hadn't been the only body burned in Alicante these past days. And Clary wasn't, I mean, she didn't...
Come to the funeral?
No, she didn't want to. Jace could feel Luke looking at him sideways.
You haven't seen her, not since...
No, not since the lake, Jace said. This was the first time they let me leave the hospital, and I had to come here.
You didn't have to, Luke said. You could have stayed away.
I wanted to, Jace admitted, whatever that says about me.
Funerals are for the living, Jace, not for the dead. Valentine was more your father than Clary's, even if you didn't share blood. You're the one who has to say goodbye. You're the one who will miss him.
I didn't think I was allowed to miss him.
You never knew Stephen Herondale, said Luke. And you came to Robert Lightwood when you were only barely still a child. Valentine was the father of your childhood. You should miss him.
I keep thinking about Hodge, Jace said, up at the guard. I kept asking him why he'd never told me what I was. I still thought I was part demon then. And he kept saying it was because he didn't know. I just thought he was lying, but now I think he meant it. He was one of the only people who ever even knew there was a Herondale baby that had lived. When I showed up at the Institute, he had no idea which of Valentine's sons I was. The real one or the adopted one. And I could have been either. The demon or the angel. And the thing is, I don't think he ever knew. Not until he saw Jonathan at the guard and realized. So he just tried to do his best by me all those years anyway, until Valentine showed up again. That took a sort of faith. Don't you think?
Yes, Luke said. I think so.
Hodge said he thought maybe upbringing might make a difference, regardless of blood. I just keep thinking, if I'd stayed with Valentine, if he hadn't sent me to the Lightwoods, would I have been just like Jonathan? Is that how I'd be now?
Does it matter? Said Luke. You are who you are now for a reason. And if you ask me, I think Valentine sent you to the Lightwoods because he knew it was the best chance for you. Maybe he had other reasons, too, but you can't get away from the fact that he sent you to people he knew would love you and raise you with love. It might have been one of the few things he ever really did for someone else.
He clapped Jace on the shoulder, a gesture so paternal that it almost made Jace smile.
I wouldn't forget about that if I were you.
Clary, standing and looking out Isabel's window, watched smoke stain the sky over Alicante like a smudged hand against a window. They were burning Valentine today, she knew, burning her father in the necropolis just outside the gates. You know about the celebration tonight, don't you? Clary turned to see Isabel behind her, holding up two dresses against herself, one blue and one steel gray. What do you think I should wear? For Isabel, Clary thought, clothes would always be therapy. The blue one? Isabel laid the dresses down on the bed. What are you going to wear? You are going, aren't you? Clary thought of the silver dress at the bottom of Amatis's chest, the lovely gossamer of it. But Amatis would probably never let her wear it. I don't know, she said. Probably jeans and my green coat. Boring, Isabel said. She glanced over at Aline, who was sitting in a chair by the bed, reading. Don't you think it's boring? I think you should let Clary wear what she wants. Aline didn't look up from her book. Besides, it's not like she's dressing up for anyone. She's dressing up for Jace, Isabel said, as if this were obvious. As well she should.
Aline looked up, blinking in confusion, then smiled. Oh, right, I keep forgetting. It must be weird, right, knowing he's not your brother?
No, Clary said firmly. Thinking he was my brother was weird. This feels right.
She looked back toward the window.
Not that I've really seen him since I found out. Not since we've been back in Alicante.
That's strange, said Aline.
It's not strange, Isabel said, shooting Aline a meaningful look, which Aline didn't seem to notice. He's been in the hospital. He only got out today.
And he didn't come to see you right away? Aline asked Clary.
He couldn't, Clary said. He had Valentine's funeral to go to. He couldn't miss that.
Maybe, said Aline cheerfully. Or maybe he's not that interested in you anymore. I mean, now that it's not forbidden. Some people only want what they can't have.
Not Jace, Isabel said quickly. Jace isn't like that.
Aline stood up, dropping her book onto the bed. I should go get dressed. See you guys tonight? And with that, she wandered out of the room, humming to herself. Isabel watched her go, shook her head.
Do you think she doesn't like you? She said. I mean, is she jealous? She did seem interested in Jace.
Huh. Clary was briefly amused. No, she's not interested in Jace. I think she's just one of those people who say whatever they're thinking whenever they think it. And who knows, maybe she's right.
Isabel pulled the pin from her hair, letting it fall down around her shoulders. She came across the room and joined Clary at the window. The sky was clear now past the demon towers. The smoke was gone.
Do you think she's right?
I don't know. I'll have to ask Jace. I guess I'll see him tonight at the party. Or the victory celebration, or whatever it's called.
She looked up at Isabel.
Do you know what it'll be like?
There'll be a parade, Isabel said. And fireworks, probably.
Music, dancing, games, that sort of thing. Like a big street fair in New York.
She glanced out the window, her expression wistful.
Max would have loved it.
Clary reached out and stroked Isabel's hair, the way she'd stroke the hair of her own sister if she had one.
I know he would.
Jace had to knock twice at the door of the old canal house before he heard quick footsteps hurrying to answer. His heart jumped, and then settled as the door opened and Amatis Herondale stood on the threshold, looking at him in surprise. She looked as if she'd been getting ready for the celebration. She wore a long dove gray dress and pale metallic earrings that picked out the silvery streaks in her graying hair.
Yes?
Clary, he began, and stopped, unsure what exactly to say. Where had his eloquence gone? He'd always had that, even when he hadn't had anything else. But now he felt as if he'd been ripped open and all the clever, facile words had poured out of him, leaving him empty. I was wondering if Clary was here. I was hoping to talk to her. Amatis shook her head. The blankness had gone from her expression, and she was looking at him intently enough to make him nervous. She's not. I think she's with the Lightwoods.
Oh.
He was surprised at how disappointed he felt. Sorry to have bothered you.
It's no bother. I'm glad you're here, actually, she said briskly. There was something I wanted to talk to you about. Come into the hall. I'll be right back.
Jay stepped inside as she disappeared down the hallway. He wondered what on earth she could have to talk to him about. Maybe Clary had decided she wanted nothing more to do with him and had chosen Amatis to deliver the message. Amatis was back in a moment. She wasn't holding anything that looked like a note, to Jace's relief, but rather she was clutching a small metal box in her hands. It was a delicate object, chased with a design of birds.
Jace, Amatis said, Luke told me that you're Stevens, that Stephen Herondale was your father. He told me everything that happened.
Jace nodded, which was all he felt called on to do. The news was leaking out slowly, which was how he liked it. Hopefully he'd be back in New York before everyone in Idris knew and was constantly staring at him.
You know I was married to Stephen before your mother was.
Amatis went on, her voice tight, as if the words hurt to say. Jace stared at her. Was this about his mother? Did she resent him for bringing up bad memories of a woman who died before he was ever born?
Of all the people alive today, I probably knew your father best.
Yes, Jace said, wishing he were elsewhere. I'm sure that's true.
I know you probably have feelings about him that are very mixed, she said, surprising him mainly because it was true. You never knew him, and he wasn't the man who raised you, but you look like him. Except for your eyes, those are your mother's. And maybe I'm being crazy, bothering you with this. Maybe you don't really want to know about Stephen at all. But he was your father, and if he'd known you... She thrust the box at him then, nearly making him jump back. These are some things of his that I saved over the years. Letters he wrote, photographs, a family tree. His witchlight stone. Maybe you don't have questions now, but some day perhaps you will, and when you do, you'll have this. She stood still, giving him the box as if she were offering him a precious treasure. Jace reached out and took it from her without a word. It was heavy, and the metal was cold against his skin. Thank you, he said. It was the best he could do. He hesitated and then said, There is one thing, something I've been wondering. Yes? If Stephen was my father, then the Inquisitor, Imogen, was my grandmother. She was. Amatus paused. A very difficult woman. But yes, she was your grandmother. She saved my life, said Jace. I mean, for a long time she acted like she hated my guts. But then she saw this. He drew the collar of his shirt aside, showing Amatus the white star-shaped scar on his shoulder. And she saved my life. But what could my scar possibly mean to her? Amatus's eyes had gone wide. You don't remember getting that scar, do you? Jay shook his head. Valentine told me it was an injury from when I was too young to remember. But now, I don't think I believe him. It's not a scar, it's a birthmark. There's an old family legend about it, that one of the first Herondales to become a shadow hunter was visited by an angel in a dream. The angel touched him on the shoulder, and when he woke up, he had a mark like that. And all his descendants have it as well. She shrugged. I don't know if the story is true, but all the Herondales have the mark. Your father had one too, here. She touched her right upper arm. They say it means you've had contact with an angel, that you're blessed in some way. Imogen must have seen the mark and guessed who you really were. Jace stared at Amatus, but he wasn't seeing her. He was seeing that night on the ship, the wet, black deck and the Inquisitor dying at his feet. She said something to me, he said. While she was dying, she said, Your father would be proud of you. I thought she was being cruel. I thought she meant Valentine. Amatus shook her head. She meant Stephen, she said softly. And she was right. He would have been. Clary pushed open Amatus's front door and stepped inside, thinking how quickly the house had become familiar to her. She no longer had to strain to remember the way to the front door, or the way the knob stuck slightly as she pushed it open. The glint of sunlight off the canal was familiar, as was the view of Alicante through the window. She could almost imagine living here, almost imagine what it would be like if Idris were home. She wondered what she'd start missing first, Chinese takeout, movies, Midtown Comics. She was about to head for the stairs when she heard her mother's voice from the living room, sharp and slightly agitated. But what could Jocelyn have to be upset about? Everything was fine now, wasn't it? Without thinking, Clary dropped back against the wall near the living room door and listened. What do you mean you're staying? Jocelyn was saying. You mean you're not coming back to New York at all? I've been asked to remain in Alicante and represent the werewolves on the council, Luke said. I told them I'd let them know tonight. Couldn't someone else do that? One of the pack leaders here in Idris. I'm the only pack leader who was once a shadow hunter, that's why they want me. He sighed. I started all this, Jocelyn. I should stay here and see it out. There was a short silence. If that's how you feel, then of course you should stay, Jocelyn said at last, but her voice didn't sound sure. I'll have to sell the bookstore, get my affairs in order. Luke sounded gruff. It's not like I'll be moving right away. I can take care of that, after everything you've done. Jocelyn didn't seem to have the energy to maintain her bright tone. Her voice trailed off into silence, a silence that stretched out so long that Clary thought about clearing her throat and walking into the living room to let them know she was there. A moment later, she was glad she hadn't. Look, Luke said. I've wanted to tell you this for a long time, but I didn't. I knew it would never matter, even if I did say it, because of what I am.
You never wanted that to be part of Clary's life. But she knows now, so I guess it doesn't make a difference. And I might as well tell you. I love you, Jocelyn. I have for 20 years. He paused. Clary strained to hear her mother's response, but Jocelyn was silent. At last, Luke spoke again, his voice heavy.
I have to get back to the council and tell them I'll stay. We don't ever have to talk about this again. I just feel better having said it after all this time.
Clary pressed herself back against the wall as Luke, his head down, stalked out of the living room. He brushed by her without seeming to see her at all and yanked the front door open. He stood there for a moment, staring blindly out at the sunshine bouncing off the water of the canal. Then he was gone, the door slamming shut behind him. Clary stood where she was, her back against the wall. She felt terribly sad for Luke, and terribly sad for her mother, too. It looked like Jocelyn really didn't love Luke, and maybe never could. It was just like it had been for her and Simon, except she didn't see any way that Luke and her mother could fix things. Not if he was going to stay here in Idris. Tears stung her eyes. She was about to turn and go into the living room when she heard the sound of the kitchen door opening and another voice. This one sounded tired and a little resigned. Amatis.
Sorry, I overheard that, but I'm glad he's staying, Luke's sister said. Not just because he'll be near me, but because it gives him a chance to get over you.
Jocelyn sounded defensive.
Amatis.
It's been a long time, Jocelyn, Amatis said. If you don't love him, you ought to let him go.
Jocelyn was silent. Clary wished she could see her mother's expression. Did she look sad? Angry? Resigned? Amatis gave a little gasp.
Unless you do love him.
Amatis, I can't.
You do! You do!
There was a sharp sound as if Amatis had clapped her hands together.
I knew it! I always knew it!
It doesn't matter. Jocelyn sounded tired. It wouldn't be fair to Luke.
I don't want to hear it.
There was a rustling noise, and Jocelyn made a sound of protest. Clary wondered if Amatis had actually grabbed hold of her mother.
If you love him, you go right now and tell him. Right now, before he goes to the council.
But they want him to be their council member, and he wants to...
All Lucian wants, said Amatis firmly, is you. You and Clary. That's all he ever wanted. Now go.
Before Clary had a chance to move, Jocelyn dashed out into the hall. She headed toward the door and saw Clary flattened against the wall. Halting, she opened her mouth in surprise.
Clary!
She sounded as if she were trying to make her voice bright and cheerful and failing miserably.
I didn't realize you were here.
Clary stepped away from the wall, grabbed hold of the doorknob, and threw the door wide open. Bright sunlight poured into the hall. Jocelyn stood blinking in the harsh illumination, her eyes on her daughter.
If you don't go after Luke, Clary said, enunciating very clearly, I, personally, will kill you.
For a moment, Jocelyn looked astonished. Then she smiled. Well, she said, if you put it like that. A moment later, she was out of the house, hurrying down the canal path toward the Accords Hall. Clary shut the door behind her and leaned against it. Amatis, emerging from the living room, darted past her to lean on the windowsill, glancing anxiously out through the pane.
Do you think she'll catch him before he gets to the hall?
My mom spent her whole life chasing me around, Clary said. She moves fast.
Amatis glanced toward her and smiled.
Oh, that reminds me, she said. Jay stopped by to see you. I think he's hoping to see you at the celebration tonight.
Is he?
Clary said thoughtfully.
Might as well ask. Nothing ventured, nothing gained.
Amatis, she said, and Luke's sister turned away from the window, looking at her curiously.
Yes?
That silver dress of yours in the trunk, said Clary. Can I borrow it?
The streets were already beginning to fill with people as Clary walked back through the city toward the Lightwoods' house. It was twilight, and the lights were beginning to go on, filling the air with a pale glow. Bunches of familiar-looking white flowers hung from baskets on the walls, filling the air with their spicy smells. Dark gold fire runes burned on the doors of the house as she passed. The runes spoke of victory and rejoicing.
There were shadow hunters out in the streets. None were wearing gear. They were in a variety of finery, from the modern to what bordered on historical costumery. It was an unusually warm night, so few people were wearing coats, but there were plenty of women in what looked to Clary like ball gowns, their full skirts sweeping the streets. A slim, dark figure cut across the road ahead of her as she turned onto the Lightwood street, and she saw that it was Raphael, hand in hand with a tall, dark-haired woman in a red cocktail dress. He glanced over his shoulder and smiled at Clary, a smile that sent a little shiver over her, and she thought that it was true, that there really was something alien about Downworlders sometimes, something alien and frightening. Perhaps it was just that everything that was frightening wasn't necessarily also bad. Although, she had her doubts about Raphael. The front door of the Lightwoods' house was open, and several of the family were already standing out on the pavement. Mayris and Robert Lightwood were there, chatting with two other adults. When they turned, Clary saw, with slight surprise, that it was the Penhallows, Aline's parents. Mayris smiled at her past them. She was elegant in a dark blue silk suit, her hair tied back from her severe face with a thick silver band. She looked like Isabel, so much so that Clary wanted to reach out and put a hand on her shoulder. Mayra still seemed so sad, even as she smiled, and Clary thought, she's remembering Max, just like Isabel was, and thinking how much he would have liked all this. Clary? Isabel bounded down the front steps, her dark hair flying behind her. She was wearing neither of the outfits she'd showed to Clary earlier, but an incredible gold satin dress that hugged her body like the closed petals of a flower. Her shoes were spiked sandals, and Clary remembered what Isabel had once said about how she liked her heels, and laughed to herself. You look fantastic. Thanks. Clary tugged a little self-consciously at the diaphanous material of the silver dress. It was probably the girliest thing she'd ever worn. It left her shoulders uncovered, and every time she felt the ends of her hair tickle the bare skin there, she had to quell the urge to hunt for a cardigan or hoodie to wrap herself in. You too. Isabel bent over to whisper in her ear. Jace isn't here. Clary pulled back. Then where? Alex says he might be at the square, where the fireworks are going to be. I'm sorry, I have no idea what's up with him. Clary shrugged, trying to hide her disappointment. It's okay. Alec and Aline tumbled out of the house after Isabel, Aline in a bright red dress that made her hair look shockingly black. Alec had dressed like he usually did, in a sweater and dark pants, though Clary had to admit that at least the sweater didn't appear to have any visible holes in it. He smiled at Clary, and she thought, with surprise, that actually he did look different. Lighter somehow, as if a weight were off his shoulders. I've never been to a celebration that had Downworlders at it before, said Aline, looking nervously down the street, where a fairy girl whose long hair was braided with flowers. No, Clary thought, her hair was flowers, connected by delicate green tendrils, was plucking some of the white blossoms out of a hanging basket, looking at them thoughtfully and eating them. You'll love it, Isabel said. They know how to party. She waved goodbye to her parents, and they set off toward the plaza. Clary, still fighting the urge to cover the top half of her body, was crossing her arms over her chest. The dress swirled out around her feet like smoke curling on the wind. She thought of the smoke that had risen over Alicante earlier that day, and shivered. Hey, Isabel said, and Clary looked up to see Simon and Maya coming toward them up the street. She hadn't seen Simon for most of the day. He'd gone to the hall to observe the preliminary council meeting because, he said, he was curious who they'd choose to hold the vampire's council seat. Clary couldn't imagine Maya wearing anything as girly as a dress. And indeed, she was clad in low-slung camo pants and a black t-shirt that said, Choose Your Weapon, and had a design of dice under the words. It was a gamer tee, Clary thought, wondering if Maya was really a gamer, or was wearing the t-shirt to impress Simon. If so, it was a good choice. You heading back down to Angel Square? Maya and Simon acknowledged that they were, and they headed toward the hall together in a companionable group. Simon dropped back to fall into step beside Clary, and they walked together in silence. It was good just to be close to Simon again. He had been the first person she'd wanted to see once she was back in Alicante. She'd hugged him very tightly, glad he was alive,
and touched the mark on his forehead. "Did it save you?" she asked, desperate to hear that she hadn't done what she had to him for no reason.
"It saved me," was all he said in reply.
"I wish I could take it off you," she said. "I wish I knew what might happen to you because of it." He'd taken hold of her wrist and drawn her hand gently back down to her side.
"We'll wait," he said, "and we'll see."
She'd been watching him closely, but she had to admit that the mark didn't seem to be affecting him in any visible way. He seemed just as he always had, just like Simon. Only he'd taken to brushing his hair slightly differently to cover the mark. If you didn't already know it was there, you'd never guess. "How is the meeting?" Clary asked him now, giving him a once-over to see if he'd dressed up for the celebration. He hadn't, but she hardly blamed him. The jeans and t-shirt he had on were all he had to wear. Who'd they choose?
"Not Raphael," Simon said, sounding as if he were pleased about that. "Some other vampire. He had a pretentious name, Nightshade or something."
"You know, they asked me if I wanted to draw the symbol of the new council," Clary said. "It's an honor. I said I'd do it. It's going to have the rune of the council surrounded by the symbols of the four Downworlder families. A moon for the werewolves, and I was thinking a four-leaf clover for the fairies. A spellbook for the warlocks. But I can't think of anything for the vampires."
"How about a fang?" Simon suggested. "Maybe dripping blood?" He bared his teeth.
"Thank you," Clary said. "That's very helpful."
"I'm glad they asked you," Simon said, more seriously. "You deserve the honor. You deserve a medal, really, for what you did. The Alliance rune and everything."
Clary shrugged. "I don't know. I mean, the battle barely went on for 10 minutes after all that. I don't know how much I helped."
"I was in the battle, Clary," Simon said. "It may have been about 10 minutes long, but it was the worst 10 minutes of my life. And I don't really want to talk about it, but I will say that even in that 10 minutes, there would have been a lot more death if it hadn't been for you. Besides, the battle was only part of it. If you hadn't done what you did, there would be no new council. We would be Shadowhunters and Downworlders hating each other, instead of Shadowhunters and Downworlders going to a party together."
Clary felt a lump rising in her throat and stared straight ahead, willing herself not to tear up. "Thanks, Simon." She hesitated, so briefly that no one who wasn't Simon would have noticed it. But he did.
"What's wrong?" he asked her.
"I'm just wondering what we do when we get back home," she said. "I mean, I know Magnus took care of your mom, so she hasn't been freaking out that you're gone. But school? We've missed a ton of it, and I don't even know..."
"You're not going back," Simon said quietly. "You think I don't know that? You're a Shadowhunter now. You'll finish up your education at the Institute."
"And what about you? You're a vampire. Are you just going to go back to high school?"
"Yeah," Simon said, surprising her. "I am. I want a normal life, as much as I can have one. I want high school and college and all of that."
She squeezed his hand. "Then you should have it." She smiled up at him. "Of course, everyone's going to freak out when you show up at school."
"Freak out? Why?"
"Because you're so much hotter now than when you left." She shrugged. "It's true. Must be a vampire thing."
Simon looked baffled. "I'm hotter now?"
"Sure you are. I mean, look at those two. They're both totally into you."
She pointed to a few feet in front of them, where Isabel and Maya had moved to walk side by side, their heads bent together.
Simon looked up ahead at the girls. Clary could almost swear he was blushing.
"Are they? Sometimes they get together and whisper and stare at me. I have no idea what it's about."
"Sure you don't," Clary grinned. "Poor you. You have two cute girls vying for your love. Your life is so hard."
"Fine. You tell me which one to choose then."
"No way. That's on you."
She lowered her voice again.
"Look, you can date whoever you want, and I will totally support you. I'm all about support. Support is my middle name."
"So that's why you never told me your middle name. I figured it was something embarrassing."
Clary ignored this. "But just promise me something, okay? I know how girls get. I know how they hate their boyfriends having a best friend who's a girl. Just promise me you won't cut me out of your life totally.
that we can still hang out sometimes.
Sometimes? Simon shook his head. Clary, you're crazy.
Her heart sank.
You mean?
I mean that I would never date a girl who insisted that I cut you out of my life. It's non-negotiable. You want a piece of all this fabulousness?
He gestured at himself.
Well, my best friend comes along with it. I wouldn't cut you out of my life, Clary, any more than I would cut off my right hand and give it to someone as a Valentine's Day gift.
Gross, said Clary.
Must you?
He grinned.
I must.
Angel Square was almost unrecognizable. The hall glowed white at the far end of the plaza, partly obscured by an elaborate forest of huge trees that had sprung up in the center of the square. They were clearly the product of magic. Although, Clary thought, remembering Magnus's ability to whisk furniture and cups of coffee across Manhattan at the blink of an eye, maybe they were real, if transplanted. The trees rose nearly to the height of the demon towers, their silvery trunks wrapped with ribbons, colored lights caught in the whispering green nets of their branches. The square smelled of white flowers, smoke, and leaves. All around its edges were placed tables and long benches, and groups of shadow hunters and downworlders crowded around them, laughing and drinking and talking. Yet despite the laughter, there was a somberness mixed with the air of celebration, a present sorrow side by side with joy. The stores that lined the square had their doors thrown open, light spilling out onto the pavement. Partygoers streamed by, carrying plates of food and long-stemmed glasses of wine and brightly colored liquids. Simon watched a Kelpie skip past, carrying a glass of blue fluid, and raised an eyebrow.
It's not like Magnus's party, Isabel reassured him. Everything here ought to be safe to drink.
Ought to be? Aline looked worried.
Alec glanced toward the mini-forest, the colored lights reflecting in the blue irises of his eyes. Magnus stood in the shadow of a tree, talking to a girl in a white dress with a cloud of pale brown hair. She turned as Magnus looked toward them, and Clary locked eyes with her for a moment across the distance that separated them. There was something familiar about her, though Clary couldn't have said what it was. Magnus broke away and came toward them, and the girl he'd been talking to slipped into the shadows of the trees and was gone. He was dressed like a Victorian gentleman in a long black frock coat over a violet silk vest. A square pocket handkerchief embroidered with the initials MB protruded from his vest pocket.
Nice vest, said Alec with a smile.
Would you like one exactly like it? Magnus inquired. In any color you prefer, of course.
I don't really care about clothes, Alex protested.
And I love that about you, Magnus announced. Though I would also love if you owned perhaps one designer suit. What do you say? Dolce, Zegna, Armani?
Alex sputtered as Isabel laughed, and Magnus took the opportunity to lean close to Clary and whisper in her ear.
The Accords Hall steps. Go.
She wanted to ask him what he meant, but he'd already turned back to Alec and the others. Besides, she had a feeling she knew. She squeezed Simon's wrist as she went, and he turned to smile at her before returning to his conversation with Maya. She cut through the edge of the glamour forest to cross the square, weaving in and out of the shadows. The trees reached up to the foot of the hall stairs, which was probably why the steps were almost deserted. Though not entirely. Glancing toward the doors, Clary could make out a familiar dark outline seated in the shadow of a pillar. Her heart quickened. Jace. She had to gather her skirt up in her hands to climb the stairs, afraid she'd step on and tear the delicate material. She almost wished she had worn her normal clothes as she approached Jace, who was sitting with his back to a pillar, staring out over the square. He wore his most mundane clothes, jeans, a white shirt, and a dark jacket over them. And for almost the first time since she'd met him, she thought, he didn't seem to be carrying any weapons. She abruptly felt overdressed. She stopped a slight distance away from him, suddenly unsure what to say. As if sensing her there, Jace looked up. He was holding something balanced in his lap, she saw, a silvery box. He looked tired. There were shadows under his eyes, and his pale gold hair was untidy. His eyes widened.
Clary?
Who else would it be? He didn't smile.
You don't look like you.
It's the dress. She smoothed her hands down the material self-consciously. I don't usually wear things this pretty.
You always look beautiful, he said. And she remembered the first time he'd called her beautiful in the greenhouse at the Institute.
He hadn't said it like it was a compliment, but just as if it were an accepted fact, like the fact that she had red hair and liked to draw.
But you look distant, like I couldn't touch you.
She came over then and sat down next to him on the wide top step. The stone was cold through the material of her dress. She held her hand out to him. It was shaking slightly, just enough to be visible.
Touch me, she said, if you want to.
He took her hand and laid it against his cheek for a moment. Then he set it back down in her lap. Clary shivered a little, remembering Aline's words back in Isabel's bedroom.
Maybe he's not interested anymore, now that it's not forbidden. He had said she looked distant, but the expression in his eyes was as remote as a faraway galaxy.
What's in the box? She asked. He was still clutching the silver rectangle tightly in one hand. It was an expensive-looking object, delicately carved with a pattern of birds.
I went to Amatis's earlier today looking for you, he said, but you weren't there. So I talked to Amatis. She gave me this. He indicated the box. It belonged to my father.
For a moment, she just looked at him, uncomprehendingly.
This was Valentine's, she thought,
and then with a jolt.
No, that's not what he means.
Of course, she said. Amatis was married to Stephen Herondale.
I've been going through it, he said, reading the letters, the journal pages. I thought if I did that, I might feel some sort of connection to him. Something that would leap off the pages at me saying, yes, this is your father. But I don't feel anything. Just bits of paper. Anyone could have written these things.
Jace, she said softly.
And that's another thing, he said. I don't have a name anymore, do I? I'm not Jonathan Christopher. That was someone else. But it's the name I'm used to.
Who came up with Jace as a nickname? Did you come up with it yourself?
Jace shook his head. No. Valentine always called me Jonathan. And that's what they called me when I first got to the Institute. I was never supposed to think my name was Jonathan Christopher, you know. That was an accident. I got the name out of my father's journal. But it wasn't me he was talking about. It wasn't my progress he was recording. It was it was Jonathan's. So the first time I ever told Mayris that my middle name was Christopher, she told herself that she'd just remembered wrong. And Christopher had been Michael's son's middle name. It had been 10 years, after all. But that was when she started calling me Jace. It was like she wanted to give me a new name, something that belonged to her, to my life in New York. And I liked it. I'd never liked Jonathan. He turned the box over in his hands. I wonder if maybe Mayris knew, or guessed, but just didn't want to know. She loved me, and she didn't want to believe it.
Which is why she was so upset when she found out you were Valentine's son, said Clary. Because she thought she ought to have known. She kind of did know. But we never do want to believe things like that about people we love. And Jace, she was right about you. She was right about who you really are. And you do have a name. Your name is Jace. Valentine didn't give that name to you. Mayris did. The only thing that makes a name important, and yours, is that it's given to you by someone who loves you.
Jace what? He said. Jace Herondale?
Oh, please, she said. You're Jace Lightwood. You know that. He raised his eyes to hers. His lashes shadowed them thickly, darkening the gold. She thought he looked a little less remote, though perhaps she was imagining it.
Maybe you're a different person than you thought you were, she went on, hoping against hope that he understood what she meant.
But no one becomes a totally different person overnight. Just finding out that Stephen was your biological father isn't going to automatically make you love him. And you don't have to. Valentine wasn't your real father, but not because you don't have his blood in your veins. He wasn't your real father because he didn't act like a father. He didn't take care of you. It's always been the Lightwoods who have taken care of you. They're your family. Just like Mom and Luke are mine.
She reached back to touch his shoulder, then drew her hand back.
I'm sorry, she said.
Here I am lecturing you, and you probably came up here to be alone.
You're right, he said.
Clary felt the breath go.